Hello, everyone, and welcome to Discussing Trek. Today, we are here to review Season 2, Episode 3 of Strange New Worlds, Tomorrow and Tomorrow and Tomorrow. Like always, I'm your host, Clarence, and I'm joined by my fellow co-host, slash Trekkies, starting none other than Larry Irby. How you doing, man?
Hanging in here. How about you?
No complaints. It's the holidays, man. It's the 4th.
It's crazy time.
Crazy time. You cooking up the barbecue, man?
Ugh, I'm going to be working.
Well, I know how that is. I know the feeling. And also on the podcast, we have Kyle Jones. How you doing, man?
I'm doing good, but I'm wondering if I got here on the wrong day. I'm just curious. You want to know why?
Why is
that? Because you kept saying tomorrow and tomorrow and tomorrow. And I was like, dang it. Did I get here on the wrong day?
The jokes start already for a very timey-wimey, dare I say, episode. Of course, what we do here on this podcast is review Star Trek in excessive detail, in addition to talking all things Trek. And we're here to review Strange New Worlds, as you said, Kyle, tomorrow and tomorrow and tomorrow. The episode was written by David Reed and directed by Amanda Rowe. Laan travels back in time to 21st century Earth to prevent an attack which will alter humanity's future history and bring her face to face with her own contentious legacy.
For anyone listening, if you have not seen this episode, Tomorrow and Tomorrow and Tomorrow, don't creep in a petty pace. Go, put us on pause, come back, because from this moment forward, spoilers.
Spoilers.
Red alert. All hands stand to battle stations.
I'll give you the right.
You cannot destroy an Undine.
At ease before you sprain something.
The spoiler warning has been dropped, and as always, we're right back to Mr. Jones for the beats of the episode. Sometimes serious, sometimes comedic. Honestly, you never know. Mr. Jones, what do you have for us this week, sir?
I'm having fun with this. So once again, Tomorrow and Tomorrow and Tomorrow did not creep in a petty pace from moment to moment because this episode rocked.
Wow. Okay, high marks already for Mr. Jones. Larry, let's get your high-level thoughts on this episode, sir.
Any episode that has time travel shenanigans is going to be something that I'm definitely going to be into. So I enjoyed the episode a lot. But I also had, I tell you, a couple criticisms of it that we'll get into. I don't know, it might be controversial.
Mr. Jones, before I give my thoughts on the episode, do you have any additional thoughts to add?
Sure, we'll get into this. I really unexpectedly liked a character that I liked, and they explained something of something that we may touch on, but that I really liked. So those were my two big things that I took from that. So enjoyed it.
All right. And for me, I think I really liked it. The second viewing, I liked it much more. It kind of meandered a little bit to me in the first quarter of the episode. There was a lot of table setting, I guess, or a lot of getting to know these characters, which in the end, it was great to do. But we were, I hate to say wasting a lot of time, but we were, you know, getting to know Kirk and Laan a little bit more as they were trapped in this new time. And they got acquainted with the time they were in. So, but overall, I really enjoyed the episode. I thought it was well done. The last quarter or last third of the episode, man, it just takes off and keeps going to get to the very end. And I had no idea we were going where we went. Of course, Tomorrow and Tomorrow and Tomorrow is from Macbeth, and it was written by Shakespeare, of course. And it means kind of the idea that day by day leads to your inevitable death. So I don't know how that plays into this episode. Maybe you could say this was kind of inevitable for Kirk not to survive this episode. But we can get into all of that. So the very beginning, I love that we get this kind of slice of life of Laan at the very beginning of the episode. Box playing his lute too loud. The transport officer is getting blamed for stealing somebody's ring in the transporter, which I like that. That's the first time I heard that. And also we get some backstory on Pelia and her artifacts. Just thoughts on Pelia real quick, because to me, she's coming off like, I hate to say a crazy person, but she's just like having fun. Having fun, of course, as the actor, but I can't pin this character down. thoughts on Peli in this episode. We can go anywhere in the episode because we get the eventual, we get the foreshadowing early on to what we see later in the episode. But thoughts on Peli. Let's just get into her and talk about her in this episode.
I love this character. I said it from the first moment I saw her. She's the kind of character I navigate to. But beyond the wacky, offbeat characters that I always navigate to, she is showing subtleties of layers on characters. And I think some of this offbeat, off-the-wall mood that she has is more of disarming people when they're around her than it is her just being goofy. So I think there's many more layers to this character than just being a goofy off-ball character.
I like Peli. That was actually a quite comical moment. I felt it could have been a little better. And the only reason I say that even is because it's kind of hectic. It's very weird. She seems a little bit like she's a little bit of Ferengi.
Yeah, I definitely get that.
I love where she hit with that. Yeah, I'm hanging on to this money. You never know if this no money utopia is just a fad.
Yeah, she has a bunker in Iowa that she plans to escape back to if the crap hits the fan, you know?
Yeah, and that's crazy, too, because you think as old as she is, she's seen the rise and fall of all kind of stuff. So she would look at the Federation and go, yeah, this is nice, but I don't know if it's
America was nice, too, back in the whenevers.
Yeah, I like you, Kyle, I think I'm beginning to love this character. And for all her zaniness, you know, we see she comes on the ship and has all these artifacts that look like she's stolen over the many, many years she's been alive. And this archaeology department that she was supposed to be a part of wasn't so glamorous as it seemed. But yeah, I'm growing to love the character and really enjoyed her in this episode.
You know, and I hope I'm not jumping ahead here, but there is a moment, and I just don't want us to forget it. The actor, there's a scene that this actor does toward the end of the episode where Leon walks back onto the bridge. It's nothing that's said, but she just looks around either number one or the captain and just kind of tilts her head. And it says a lot about the episode. So that's something else I like.
Yeah, and it's so crazy to think, okay, when we were at this very beginning, did she already know that she met Lon? Obviously, it seems like she should because you think about the timeline, but this timey-wimey stuff, as Janeway says, always hurts my brain. Don't think about it too hard. Real quick, let's give some shout-outs to the chat room. Retney, good to have you back in the chat, as well as Tasha, Sinister Silhouettes, Tasha, in the chat as well. And Retney says, I like her and how she breaks up the vibe of the other personalities. I'm sure her character will reach our hearts down the road. Agreed. And we get an additional fight scene with Mbinga and Laan struggling with her ancestry, which is something that definitely comes back strong in this episode. And again, it seems like we're on that eugenics train for this season, so I'm really enjoying that. But let's talk about this scene when she walks down the corridor. This man in a very modern, our modern suit, runs in with a gunshot. And he is out for the count, and he gives her this device and sets her off on this mission. Larry, you know, the title gives away a little bit, but did you immediately think something timey-wimey was going on when we got this scene?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, because number one, the way he appeared, it looked like a 29th, 30th century transporter. I mean, you basically just flash in.
Yeah.
So it's, that definitely told me that. Plus, that's where they were taking us in the trailer anyway. So it's like sometimes they put too much in the trailers.
Yeah, they gave us this scene on the last Ready Room. Mm-hmm. People immediately saying, oh, that looks like the screen from Relativity and, you know, sends us down this path.
That was very cool.
Cal, we get to the bridge and we see not Captain Pike, but Captain James T. in the captain's chair. What did you think?
I originally rolled my eyes, and that's why I but that's why I enjoyed this episode, because and I think they were smart with the way they did it. They made me like him as Kirk in this episode. So I think that was important. So, yes, I rolled my eyes. That's the truth. But I enjoyed his portrayal by the end.
Yeah, and we quickly get into the sense of Laan's timeline, or the prime timeline that we all know and love, doesn't exist. And we get some of the comparisons. Kirk doesn't even know who Noonien Singh is. He doesn't know that name. So that definitely, again, pushes us along the path of something's crazy going to be happening by the end of this episode. United Earth Fleet instead of Federation / Starfleet. So I thought that was very interesting as well. Real quick shout out to Harry Henderson and Mary Kay in the chat. Good to have you. So let's move along. They're struggling for this device, and all of a sudden we find ourselves in modern day and time. And let's just kind of play this out, because what you get in a lot of these time travel shows where you got to like gauge where you are. You got to learn how to survive where you are. So immediately they go and get clothes. We have Kirk playing chess. You know, that's simple. That's simple. That's 2D chess. That's regular chess. Playing chess to get some money. And, you know, this was their slice of life, their reality in this time. Any thoughts on any of these scenes as we lead up into the hotel before we get to the actual explosion on the bridge?
I thought that it was, number one, I love Paul Wesley as Kirk. He just felt good. He doesn't try to be William Shatner. He does his own interpretation of the character, which is good to me. You just knew something was going to be up. Time travel. I love when they're trying the fish out of water thing. It's usually funny. The door joke was a little lame, but other than that, I thought it was a lot of fun, and it seemed pretty natural how they were getting to know each other. I mean, yeah. I know we were missing days in between, probably.
Yeah.
For them to become that close by the end.
You know, that scene, and I don't know why, Larry, but you talking about it made me remember where that scene kept popping in my head. Where have I seen this before, beyond countless other things, which is the Wonder Woman movie, the first movie? There's a scene where she gets stuck in the door like that. She's got the sword on her back, and she's trying to go into the department store and gets stuck in the door, same fish out of water kind of story.
Oh, and I got to laugh at Derek's comment in the chat that Kirk calls this 2D chess stupid chess. I thought that was pretty funny. But so much great stuff. Even though I feel like they meandered a little bit at the beginning, I feel like it was a bunch of great stuff there as well. Our heroes start to settle into this past, stealing clothes, check. Hustle for money, check. Sample the local cuisine, check. You know, they kind of do all of that. And then we start to get into more details of the differences of the timeline. Kirk has never been on Earth. He was born in space on the USS Iowa, which I thought that was pretty cool, because we know he's born in Riverside, Iowa. And also, if you're in the Kelvin timeline, he was born on a shuttle, I believe, if I remember correctly. But yeah, we start to get some of his backstory that's different. Never been on Earth. Toronto does not exist in his timeline because it was exploded, or it had an explosion there that decimated the area. I thought all the divergence in timeline stuff like was really fascinating. What are you guys' thoughts on these divergences or the differences in the timelines?
Now, I was just sitting here thinking I wish Jonathan were here, because he hates time travel.
He does. He does. Thoughts, Larry?
Well, here's my thing, because this time travel, this timeline thing is a kicker for me, because I've just seen so much discord, pun the phrase, on this week. So I felt I enjoyed the fact that they made all the stuff that Kirk didn't know make sense, because he would have grown up on a ship or on a base. He never grew up on Earth. So, you know, it made sense. It wasn't wonky. It might have been silly at times.
Picking up a few comments real quick. Johnny Fitzhugh says, howdy, the Kirk downplays his brilliance, which is a welcome change. I agree as well. John says, I don't know if it was good or bad, but the relationship dynamic made me forget it was Star Trek. Interesting, it did feel like we were just in a normal television show for a little while. Also from Tasha, it was giving Kirk and Edith Keeler to me. Very poignant. Yeah, I love how, or when we get to the point when Kirk talks about the fork in the road, and he's like, I'm just going to do nothing, you know? Why should I do anything? Why do I want to sacrifice myself, my friends, the people I know, to make your timeline right? And it was really interesting when La'an started talking about his brother, Sam. I really love that moment. And for all of the arguing I was doing, about Sam being in the series at first, I've really grown to love him. So I love how she uses that as a tool to actually reel Kirk into the right timeline. Larry, would you have been that, would you have made that choice so easily to choose what was supposedly right? Because you know what you know, right? So who's right. to say Luan's timeline is any better? Now, it's obviously better because, you know, utopia and stuff. But who's to say it's better than Kirk's timeline in this episode?
That is a hard thing because I've always told people, it's like it almost goes back to the Kangs, you know, each one fighting for their own universe.
Hmm.
When you look at that principle, it's like, yeah, why would I trust you? You mean like basically I'm never going to exist for your timeline. So I think it's a little bigger decision than what TV makes it look like. He says, oh, well, your timeline is the proper timeline. This one must cease. I saw that on the show one time and I was like, yeah. I don't know if I'd be that noble about not existing anymore. But this was really, like I said, if time travel is kind of a crutch Star Trek uses, but they do it for people like me because I love time travel more than anything.
Yeah, so we get the explosion, and they think that explosion might be the focal point that changes things. But both of them remember that happening in their timeline, so they immediately be like, okay, that's not it, so it has to be something else. And we get this scene with this character named Sarah, who is, what do you call these internet sleuth-type people, investigators?
Nosy.
I just thought she's a YouTuber.
Yeah, YouTuber, or, you know, just these people that are trying to figure out all the mysteries on the internet. She's one of those, like, conspiracy theory.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So, at first, it seems very laid back, like she's just there in a reporting capacity. But, you know, we find out it gets a lot more interesting. After this photonic explosion or this photonic bomb, Kirk steals a car, which is my problem in the episode. I just feel like it was an ad. Did it feel like ad placement to any of you guys for a Dodge? It was a Dodge Charger.
Yep. It was.
It went on forever.
Yeah, I get a little ad revenue, man. Sorry.
I'm sorry. I'm laughing at Derek's comment in the chat. It's probably just me, but I kept seeing Modern Family's Phil Dunphy with this version of Kirk. Now that you say it, I see it. So I totally get it. I've grown to like the actor, but I don't think he just doesn't exude Kirk to me, which is fine. It's a different interpretation. It's fine. But I'm ready for him to start moving closer to the Kirk we know. And that's going to come with time, hopefully.
See, what's interesting is I think I maybe like him because he doesn't remind me so much of the other Kirk. And I know that's Star Trek blaspheme, but that's just my point. I mean, I just kind of like him a little better.
Something interesting, right before they steal the car, Kirk does the Vulcan nerve pinch, which he supposedly learned from a Vulcan in a prison. Now, help me out, Larry. He was never able to do that in TOS, right?
Nope.
I remember an episode that Spock was saying... Spock did it.
I tried to show you, Captain.
Yeah. So it was cool to see him, at least in this timeline, figure out the nerve pinch. I thought that was pretty cool. And the car chase was cringy to me. And even cringier was the moment when the cops show up to obviously arrest Kirk. He should have been arrested. Let's just be clear. But they try to use this whole social media pushback that a lot of people have been using for, I don't want to use the word social justice and like light anybody's fire or anything, but they kind of used that to get Kirk off from getting arrested. I cringed very hard at that. It was very bad. It didn't sit right with me.
Yeah, you could have cut that scene out. It wouldn't have taken anything away from the show. Main character speed through streets without getting stopped for a ticket all the time.
Any thoughts, Kyle?
Well, the last time you had your main characters come in contact with the police, they got arrested. And we're talking about Picard season two, which was a big storyline. So it's interesting how a couple of years or decades or centuries makes a difference when you come to Earth, I guess, maybe.
Also funny is that people were, if I'm remembering correctly, people were like up in arms that Rafi and Seven knew how to drive a car.
Yes.
Well, remember in this reality, Kirk drove the car because remember in a piece of the action,
yep,
that's true. In the mob, you know, Kirk can't drive. And I thought, well, that was like a 1930s car. I wouldn't be able to drive one of those. I saw one of those in the comments. Oh, well, if Kirk can drive a, what was it called? Mustang Camaro.
I also love in the car, there was a moment that Kirk did something, which I always do, getting Sung and Sing mixed up. And he does the same thing in this episode. So I thought, yeah, that's a shout out to the people who always get confused. And I'm one of them. So that was for me. Let's just talk about Sarah a little bit. Sarah, I know I mentioned her a few minutes ago, but let's just take it to the natural conclusion of who she is. I think she did a very good job as a believable internet person that's investigating stuff. I think the actor did a wonderful job. And even the way it was explained in the story with her little iPad and her little picture she pulled off the internet, I thought all that was very believable and well done. But, you know, as we get further along, we kind of see who she really is. So thoughts on Sarah overall in this episode? Kyle, do you have any thoughts?
I thought she came across very convenient at the beginning. You know, at first it seemed a little natural, but then when she showed up again and it's like, okay, where are you leading me to? But for the actor, I think she balanced it well to where you felt comfortable, but then almost too comfortable with it. So I think she did a good job.
I really enjoyed this character. I really did. I felt she was, I liked the setup of the, this could be just somebody in one scene and they're out. But then to come back, this is, she has a much bigger role. I enjoyed this character because I enjoyed just the nuances of, you know, her being a Romulan and having been stuck there for 30 years. And I like that because it would explain why she was so comfortable in the culture.
Yeah.
She'd been there for 30 years. And her friends probably wondering, man, she don't get no older, does she?
Yeah, Mary Kay is saying, I was not expecting her reveal. It totally missed me, too. I had no idea. They did that so well. But she was conveniently popping up a lot. So at that point, I guess we had to know something was up. But man, in the end, who she really was, I was clueless on it. Real quick, let's just take a quick detour to Pelia in Vermont. You know, I mentioned it up top. She comes off kind of kooky a little bit. And maybe some of that is warranted because this whole archaeological institute that she has is none other than a barn out in Vermont. And interestingly enough, she is not an engineer at all.
Yeah.
Chicken and egg, Cal. Help me out here.
I think this is the beauty of time travel. I think this is time travel done right. It's something that adds a layer to the tapestry, but does not shatter or break it. I love the idea that you may have planted the seed for her to be where she was first when we first met her. So I think that's cool.
They did this scene very, very well. And I mean, the whole thing around Pelia is you would just assume, oh, she gets there and she's this engineer, at least of this time period, and she can help us do this, this, and this. And she can't do any of that. Because she, like she said, she's not an engineer. She's lived so long. It's absolutely makes sense that later on in life, she decides to take up another profession.
Yeah.
That's probably one of the better stories that this character has had since they introduced her.
Yeah. And as our friend Tasha loves to say, butterflies. And, you know, they plant the idea in her head of being an engineer. And she goes on many years later to teach what warp core theory at Starfleet. Mm-hmm. So this is where it was all planted in her head. So I found that very, very fascinating. And of course, they go there to get these divers watches that has tritium that allows them to detect radioactivity. That was over my head, of course, but interesting nonetheless. And let's back up a little bit and just talk about how close Lon and Kirk get by the time we get to the end of the episode and culminating in a very Kirk-esque kiss by the end of this episode. Did you guys see the relationship getting that close? Because it seems like Lon would be open to it, but also no. I don't know if I saw that for a character in the beginning of this episode.
I think I picked up on it about midway through, because by that point I decided, okay, you guys are getting too close. This is going to be an aborted timeline that only one of them will remember. And obviously we know which one that's going to be. So I kind of saw it coming.
I knew when I saw where this was going, because we consume so much stuff. I'd already ruined this for me because I saw a picture of them kissing. So I kind of knew that was coming. But yeah, man, it made sense. You know, you have a little romance. It's all right. Just a little bit.
And as I wrote in my notes, Kirk be Kirkin is what I wrote. So I'll make that a thing.
For sure. Even in an alternate timeline that's going to be aborted, still getting lucky.
Oh, pick up a few comments right here. Tasha says that talking about the Pelia future career as an engineer, that's the predestination paradox. That makes a lot of sense to me. Retney says that one of you guys said that Pelia gives off a Guinan vibe, and I got that in this episode. So did I. Very mystical person through time, and that's kind of what we got here. And also about Kirk saying, I do because women can't resist his charm. He's still Kirk. Fair enough. And another comment here from Jenny Fitzhugh. Pelia may have forced her way onto the Enterprise because she knew she had a connection to this ship from this incident. Very interesting. Very interesting. Also, from Derek, I would love to see her bring some of that 100 years of wisdom. Yeah, me too. I feel like we're going to get that by the time we get to the end of the season. I really think she's going to become more and more important as the season goes on. And she's such a mysterious character. And, you know, I'm becoming to love her more and more the more we get to see of her. So, yeah, I'm down for it. Also, Tasha says, right, the similarities are there, but the differences are stark as well. Talking about Pelia and Guinan. Yep, I agree. So let's just get to it. Sarah kills Kirk. I don't know if he thought he was invincible or she just wouldn't do it. I mean, Romulan on Earth for the last 30 years, you got to think she would do it, but he doesn't think she'd do it. And Kirk dies, which is kind of a sad thing. And one of his last few words there was, say hi to Sam for me. So that was very touching and like, oh man. And then we know what's going to happen to Sam in the future. Spoilers. So yeah, that was a heck of a moment right there. And let's talk about Sarah's plan B, which is to get Laan to get her into the facility. And they go to the genetic laboratory where they see a door that says Khan. At what point did you guys think we were going here? Or did you ever think we were going here? And I'll just answer first. For me, I didn't see Sarah coming at all. And I definitely didn't think we were. Well, let me back up. When I saw that we're in the Noonian Institute, I thought we might see Khan. But still, when we got to that room, I'm like, oh, man, what is going on here? Isn't Khan grown right now? Yeah. Thoughts, Larry? And I know you have a big problem with this. So let's hear what you have to say about this kind of retconning going on here.
Okay. I don't have a problem with retcons at all. I have a problem with people trying to explain them. That's my problem here. Okay. So we're saying now that this stuff didn't happen in the 1990s, right?
Yes. Okay. Sarah's been there since 92 to try to find Khan to kill him.
They give all the explanation that is needed. They said there was this whole temporal war fought over this. You know, there can be changes. This is the biggest thing I've heard. There can be changes within a timeline without it being a new timeline.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
A lot of people seem to think that, oh, from this moment on, Star Trek Strange New Worlds is an alternate timeline. No. And I know I read an interview with the producer about why they did this, right? And he said no. And he literally said, no, going forward, this is not a different timeline. Things that happened during the temporal war, maybe we see them, maybe we don't, slightly altered the timeline. And I told him we did that before, yesterday's Enterprise.
Yeah.
So at some point, there was a young Tasha on this planet, that failed colony.
Yeah.
And at the same time, there was another adult Tasha on Romulus.
Yeah.
Right. So but it didn't alter the rest of the timeline. So I felt they fixed something they didn't have to, because to me, I said that Star Trek history and our real world history don't have to match up.
Which, from a relatable standpoint, I see why they do it. And I'm okay with it as long as they can do it and still make it make sense. So for me, I'm fine. I don't care. I'm fine with it. And they even say in the story that Sarah says this, many people tried to influence, delay, and stop Khan from existing. It also seems that Khan himself could have been a focal point. And I'm going to throw this to you, Cal, a focal point of the temporal wars. But also, I take that focal point to mean this is, as we say in Doctor Who talk, maybe a fixed point in time that's destined to happen anyway, or that should happen anyway.
Yeah, that's what I'm sitting here thinking, especially when you go into the idea of people have tried to delay, people have tried to stop, and he continues to happen. And while I agree with everything that was just said just a minute ago, I have to disagree a little bit, because I do love the fact of when you take something that's canon and use your own canon to explain it. I know not, and I get your point about not everything needs to be explained, but when you do explain it, I kind of like something that I can at least understand. And maybe that was just me. I was able to understand it. And I kind of have seen DC Comics have something similar to this, where they have to continue to figure out, hey, characters introduced in 1940 doesn't make sense almost 100 years later. So that I can appreciate.
It almost makes me want to have a series where we just like lay out the temporal wars. We've had it mentioned, of course, in Enterprise, even in, I think got it, Discovery had mention of it as well. So I just want to hear more about that and see that kind of flushed out a little bit. I think it's an interesting time period that could play in.
I could have created your show for you, Clarence. I said this years I've been going around saying, why does somebody not do a show about the temporal time agency from Daniel's time? That would be the perfect Star Trek show. You could visit timelines we know. You could visit timelines we've never seen, but that we've heard of. That would be like a great, because they do time travel so much. You can't tell. You remember what they said to Janeway on that episode, the relativity first officer? He said, you do show up too much on our sensors. Try to avoid time travel.
Yeah, Voyager has a lot of time travel episodes, man.
A lot.
And not just like small implication time travel episodes. They like really change some stuff. In-game, timeless. That's just a few. There's a bunch of them, really. That's kind of why I like Voyager. They have a lot of those. In the chat, Johnny Fitzhugh says, it seems in TOS and maybe generations that they said records of that time period were spotty and many records were lost. So maybe dates can't be relied upon. Yeah, that is something they focused on in season 2 of Picard. He mentioned that the records from this time period were bad. So, yeah, we have many ways they can kind of explain it. So, again, I'm from the opinion, as long as they can explain it well with good storytelling, it's fine with me. I don't care. Let's talk about that impossible choice for Alon. And was it really that impossible? We know that she's been lamenting her heritage since the first season of Strange New Worlds and obviously her whole life, but it's kind of come to a head and we're here and she can make a choice, which is kind of the Hitler paradox. She can't really kill Khan because then she wouldn't exist. But yeah, she has the choice to change history and prevent all of that war and destruction that was caused by her ancestor. But the funny thing is, we find out we need that to get to this utopian society that we all know and love. What do you think about that hard choice that Lon had, Cal?
I really don't, and this is going to sound so cold, but I don't really think it was a choice at this point. You know, I just think that it was the inevitable almost. So that was kind of how I saw it.
It was we've seen this played out. I mean, good Lord, we've seen this played out on Doctor Who. Yeah, it's one of those stories. I felt it's done excellent, I got to say, because this story has been done time and time again, this exact story. But to me, I always said, if you do it well, it doesn't matter if you're repeating. And I felt, you know, La'an did what she had to. She accepted the atrocities he's going to do. as horrible as they are, they have to happen in order for Earth to reach, they said, enlightenment, that stage where they realize, yeah, this ain't working, us murdering each other at an incredible rate. But I'm like, on the same thing, was there a choice to be made?
Oh, it's hard. I feel it's hard. And also, you have an innocent kid sitting there. It's, what was the movie, Minority Report with Tom Cruise? Like, you know they're going to commit crimes, but can you really kill them or do something to them now when they haven't done anything?
One thing time travel episodes in Star Trek do is generate chatter. Because, man, I've been reading article after article of people comments this week, and they were like, no, it's an alternate timeline from here on. I said that early. And then there was always somebody talking about what you just said about, I can't believe, you know, that Khan is, are we changing this? So Khan was born in the 2000s and now this is not going to happen till way in the future. Because I would say he's in his 30s, probably when he takes, you know, hold. So it's going to be almost time for first contact by this time this war happens.
Yeah, that's true. I think for me, what I liked about seeing a baby Khan, I mean, he was like 10 or whatever, but I think it lets, as a Star Trek lesson, it lets us know, even though somebody might be a monster now, they weren't always a monster. There was a point where they were a little kid, possibly influenced by environments. Who knows? Maybe it was the genetics that called him to be such a bad force. But in any case, you see this kid now, he hasn't done anything, and you have to have a little compassion for that. A few things from the chat real quick I'll pick up. Mary Kay mentions that Tasha called it totally Kirk and Edith Keeler. Yes, definitely. And also from Tasha saying, did Lon create Khan by leaving that gun in his room? Yeah, I heard Tasha mention this on her stream yesterday, as well as her review. Interesting thought. I don't know. What do you guys think? Lon goes in the room with that pistol, and instead of going back to the future with it, she leaves it on his nightstand and then zaps away. Could that be the point that changes his future going forward? Did you guys give any thought to that?
No, to me, it was just kind of one of those scenes. I saw people chattering about it. Now, I'm sure leaving a gun in that little boy's room probably had no effect on him, his tyrannical reign.
Or he could have picked it up and said, pow, 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 this is what I'm going to be doing, pow.
Oh, Lord.
Anyway, and they found the kid was so cute, right?
Yeah, heartstrings, man.
Went, you just saw the cuteness and went, oh, oh my God, you're going to massacre like a lot of people.
Yeah, like I said, just an excellent illustration of the baby Hitler thing. So, and then we get to the future, and Lon is, of course, there in her street gear. She left her Starfleet uniform in the past, along with Kirk's body and Kirk's uniform. Who knows what happens to those things? But, I mean, I assume the Department of Temporal Investigations will try to clean it up, but who knows? And she's gets back, and after she verifies the bridge, everybody's on the bridge, everything's fine, gets back to her room, and she's met by a agent, Yamale, from the Department of Temporal Investigations, who is there to tell her not to share her experience with anyone and to return their device. This moment, to me, felt very Dr. Bashir, Section 31 moment, when Sloan is waiting in his room or something when he gets back. I thought it was pretty interesting. But I guess my question to you guys, do you think we're going to see more of the Department of Temporal Investigations in Stranger Worlds?
I hope so.
I wouldn't be opposed to it.
Like I said, I thought a series about that agency would have been something awesome. I loved the whole thing when you finally figure out that's like, okay, they're not going to remember anything that happened. You know, only she remembers. She's got the watch on.
Yeah.
You know, she's thinking about him. I mean, you know, it was a lovely scene.
Yeah. And especially when we hear from Lon in this episode that she's very closed off to people. She doesn't really open up to people. She finally opens up to Kirk. And what happens to Kirk? So we get that scene where she calls Lieutenant Kirk aboard the Farragut to ask some questions about Sam, just to talk to him. So I thought that was really sweet as well. Any other thoughts on this episode before we kind of wrap this thing up?
No, I tell you, my problem was Star Trek history don't have to match real history. And when you go, it was kind of like that episode we got explaining exactly why the Klingon ridges looked, I was just like, do we really need it? I mean, I'm not opposed to the episode. It was a nice enough episode, but it's like, sometimes I feel, like I said, I've seen people all week saying it's a new timeline. They broke with the old timeline. I've seen people saying about talking about the gun. What happened with the gun?
Yeah.
Is that what you, did he break out of there with the Institute with the gun? It's like,
okay. That's in the spinoff series.
So I enjoyed this episode, and I especially think it did what time travel episodes do, make us talk, make us think, make us have theories.
Yes. Yes. Totally agreed. And with that, Larry, let's hear your rating for this episode, sir.
I am going to honestly give it a 4.
4. Nice. Nice. I can agree with that. Cal. And also I said chat room. Let's see how you rated this episode as well. But Cal, what is your rating for this episode?
I'm going to go with Larry. 4.
4. I'm going to crank it up a little bit to 4.2. Again, I don't think I loved the first half of this or the first third of this episode. I thought it was interesting, but it was meandering to me. But watching it again definitely made me really, really appreciate it a lot more for the intricacy of the storytelling. And also just spending time. I think we got to spend a lot of time with somebody that's not Pike or any of the main characters. You know, we spent a lot of time with a Kirk who we're probably not going to see anymore in this season. Maybe. I think we do see him on the transporter in the trailer, so maybe. Let Lon have this whole episode to herself. I thought that was really rewarding for me, so I'm going to be 4.2. And from the chat room, we have Retney rating this a 4.3, and we have a 3.75 from Tasha. Also, Tasha says, all people don't understand. I think the explaining was needed for them. And I think she was talking about the sliding history of the episode, I think is what she's talking about. But yeah, that's it, guys. And yeah, thanks to each and every one of you guys for being in the chat. We really appreciate it. It's been fun, and we'll be back next time. So thank you, guys. Until next time, live long and prosper.
Thanks for listening to the Discussing Trek podcast. For more information, go to discussingtrek.com/subscribe.
You've been listening to the Discussing Network. Find out more at discussingnetwork.com.